You're listening to the Self-Made is a Myth, Make a Difference Together show with your host, Coach Tim Campsall, where we talk with successful business owners to hear the stories of their journeys in building their successful businesses. And more importantly, we recognize the folks who help them excel because we know that achieving business success is not something we can do on our own.
Hello, everyone. This is Coach Tim Campsall, and I'm excited to have a fellow business owner from Indiana with us today. My guest has the ability to openly challenge norms without it coming across like she is balking against everything, which is awesome. So we'll have her explain that a little bit more. In her downtime, she loves to spend time with her son. And the thing she's most proud of is her family and the way that they love on each other and the way that they show up for each other. It's my pleasure to welcome Andrea to the show today. Hello, Andrea.
Hey, Tim. It's awesome to be here. Thanks for the invite. Thanks for having me. I'm excited for the conversation.
Well, hey, let's start with having you introduce yourself. Tell us your full name and a little bit of your personal story, like where you were born and live and your family and hobbies.
Yeah, my name is Andrea Brummett. I am actually born and raised in Indy. I graduated from Carmel High School in 1997. It keeps feeling like we're really close to that, but we're not.
It's right?
Shockingly far away.
I was 96, so I hear you.
Okay, well, let's just live in the delusion, if that's okay with you. It's better there.
Although my 96 was college, so I'm a little bit further ahead.
Okay, good. See, I love to be in the company of people who are older. It's only a matter of time till I'm there. So went to Cincinnati, University of Cincinnati for school on a dream to become an architect. I quickly learned that that was going to require way more discipline than I had available to my 18-year-old spirit at that time. So my path began to swerve a little bit more at that time towards interior design and business and bars and the like. I spent a little bit of time in at IU Bloomington, then back to Cincinnati for a stint, and then back to Indy, and I've been here ever since. So Pam and I live on the north side of Indy in the Meridian Hills neighborhood with Myrick, our 5-year-old. And then, I'm very excited that we have family so close. Almost everybody's within about 15 minutes.
Oh, wonderful.
And like, that is my grounding rooted cornerstone is, family. So it's awesome that we get to be that close and spend that much time together. We've got a couple family members in Cincinnati too, which lets us go back and forth, there. Let's see, hobby wise, we've got a new one. We took up a new hobby during, COVID. We've always really loved traveling, and adventure, whether that's with family or just with us. But I got really, really antsy about a month into COVID about not being able to, travel. So I went and acquired a very large travel trailer on a whim one day. I didn't really know whether our car would tow it. It's the impulse thing, Tim. So impulsively brought one of those home, and we've been camping ever since. We love it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So it's been kind of one of those surprise hobbies that I don't know that I ever dreamed about, but we've gotten so much value out of just enjoying kind of the beauty of like what's right underneath our nose here that you don't know about until you go to some of those parks. And then we've rekindled some really awesome friendships with
that's fantastic.
Other families that have done that. So that's been really cool.
Yeah. In offline, you shared that you like to tinker in the garden. Is that a vegetable garden or a flower garden?
It's both.
Ah.
I have absolutely no expertise. Like it ends at, I know that marigolds are a really good companion to tomato plants. As far as I go. And we don't, it's kind of a disaster. There's lots of things I do wrong, but I absolutely love it. I love having my hands in the dirt.
Yeah.
Anytime I can get them in the dirt.
Fantastic. Well, hey, is there a funny story that your family likes to tell about you that you'd be willing to share with us today?
There are lots of funny stories that my family likes to share about me. I think the key there is one that I'd be willing to share or that's appropriate for the medium here. I think there's a really good story that they tell of little Andrea that kind of sets the tone for knowing me and knowing how authentic kind of I am, that started early. When I was 4, And like just four, I had just turned four. Very, very quick background. My parents both worked. So I spent the majority of my time at my grandparents' house, at my grandmother and grandfather's house, which is about 3 or 4 miles down the road, down 67. So down a really busy highway. And I was upset with my parents for having asked me to do something very simple, something appropriate, I'm sure, for a four-year-old to do, pick something up or whatever. And I very quietly marched myself into my bedroom, packed my little four-year-old suitcase, put my blankie over my shoulder, got my teddy bear in my arms, and just left. And I was going to grandma and grandpa's. They were on vacation for 2 weeks. I knew I could do it on my own. I had the house to myself. I didn't need anybody. I knew we had some food. They had an aloe vera plant, right? In my little four-year-old mind, that meant everything was going to be fine. So yeah, I mean, that story, it gets bigger and bigger every year, how many miles I had walked before they stopped.
Right.
They were kind of, you know, traveling behind, assessing what was going on. There was finally a neighbor that was like, little girl, is everything okay? And then my kind of jumped out. But yeah, that kind of sets the tone for
that is awesome. Authority. Yes, yeah. Yes. And haven't looked back since, right?
No.
Andrea, tell us, how did the business come about? And at what point did you have the confidence that you could run your own business?
Yeah, I love that question. It makes me think about like the beginnings, which can seem really far away sometimes, but they're always right there with us. A key part of my story, Tim, is really like the history of entrepreneurs in my family. They were always everywhere. On both sides of my family. So it was all I knew growing up. My dad was an entrepreneur. My mom was a really important part of supporting that ecosystem for my dad. My grandparents were entrepreneurs. You know, I've got uncles that were business owners. My sister is a business owner. It's really kind of everywhere. So I don't think there was nothing really that I needed in terms of giving me permission to become an entrepreneur. Like all of that scary stuff was kind of already baked into the regular part of my life. It was already in my bones. I knew what it was like to experience tremendous success, followed shortly thereafter by, you know, famine and then feast and then the cycle kind of continuing. So I think the stresses and joys that are associated with being an entrepreneur and business owner are really, you know, to my benefit, all I've really ever known. None of that really seems foreign. I think, when or how I was going to become an entrepreneur was really always a matter of when the opportunity was going to provide itself. Uh-huh. And that was just show me a problem that I feel like I can solve. And the first one that I saw was I was in executive recruiting early on in my career, worked for one of my dad's firms. We were really closely associated with both the executive team and the HR team. And it blew my mind how disconnected they were. It blew my mind the way that HR was kind of consistently showing up in organizations and what it felt like they were missing. So it was the first problem I observed that I felt like I had a really good connection to, wanting to build a different experience. And at 24 years of age, I was, I say I was young enough, dumb enough, naive enough, and had a big enough ego to go do that and still be around 20 years later.
Fantastic. Well, tell us a little bit more about the company. What's the name? What do you guys do? How do you help people?
Yeah, so we've got two companies that I'm actively operating today. The Pabulum Group and Ready HR are both HR firms based out of Indianapolis. We work nationally, but take a lot of pride in calling Indy our home. The Pabulum Group has played a really exciting part of kind of leading the HR evolution for small businesses over the last 20 years. So we've got just an absolutely outstanding, one-of-a-kind HR consulting team serving the full spectrum of fractional HR needs. So everything from like a few hours a month on the HR on demand side, and then kind of everything in between, all the way to operating as the director of HR for businesses on a fractional basis. Ready HR kind of spun out of that model because it required a different employment model. I had to build the team differently, but it ultimately was a service that we were consistently offering in the foundational practices around HR, the stuff that you have to do if you're an employer. Mm. You have to run payroll. You typically have to have some sort of a benefit program. You have to be compliant. And it's extraordinarily beneficial these days if you do that on a sound human resource information technology. So we've got three technology options that we layer on that fractional team that we literally just take care of all of that foundational piece of HR.
Fantastic. And is there a certain size of business that are your ideal clients, or who do you work with? Who can reach out to you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think for both businesses, we really love being in that small business space. That is for sure where we thrive. It's where we have the most impact and the most stories to tell, you know, the most we've seen the most there. We can really have an impact there. So that's really, it's anything from 2 to 250, but where we spend most of our time is that 25 to 125 mm-hmm. space, give or take a few. And we've got, you know, the folks that fall in the 8 to 10 category that are, you can tell quickly, growing into the 25 and above space are a lot of fun to engage with too. There's a lot of good work to be done there.
Fantastic. For everyone listening, make sure to check out the companies in the link in the description, and go visit Andrea's LinkedIn and let her know that you watched her interview today.
Yeah, please. I'd love to connect. That'd be awesome.
Andrea, share a story where someone pushed you or inspired you that you could do it, even though maybe you weren't sure that you could, and the impact that person had on you.
Yeah. So much credit goes to my mom for believing in me in those early years. She was everything from, you know, a mentor to a guide, a bookkeeper, my executive assistant, a coach, my cheerleader. She was the one that really said to me, if anybody can do this, you can do this. And that was just rocket fuel for me. I was not a kid that had a lot of direction or discipline. And so the story I had in my head was that I didn't have a lot of direction or discipline. And so for somebody to say, you know, there's power in the things that are unique to you, and you can actually do these, and this is probably the right direction to you. It was tremendously empowering for me. It also gave me a really critical sense of safety at that time. Mm-hmm. Super important. I was an extraordinarily young entrepreneur. So really, really important to have at that point in time. And I would say my entire family played a really important role, but she was really critical for me. That's my mom, Katrina. Hopefully she watches, and I love you, mom. But really, really critical for me in those launching years.
Fantastic. Yeah, having that support is huge, right? Because there's so much we go through that, right, that we didn't anticipate or seems to come out of left field, and we can get stuck in that, those doubts and fears. So having that security of someone being our cheerleader is just so impactful. I'm glad you had I'm glad you had your mom there to play that role for you.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you talk about that support system and like the people to cheer you on. The other piece that I would be remiss not to mention that was so critical at that time in my career was the people willing to take a risk on me, the people that were willing to engage early. And I like to bring that up just because I think, you know, our life cycles in entrepreneurship are important too. And we get to the point where we do need to realize that, it's now our turn to take some of those calculated as well. So, you know, that's another really critical piece for me that I wouldn't want to miss.
Andrea, what's been the biggest learning that you've had as a business owner?
Oh man. I mean, whatever it is today, it'll be different the next time you ask. they come in droves. I would say probably, If I had to pick one that feels important right now, nothing is guaranteed and almost everything is actually out of your control. I think it's interesting because as business owners, we like to create like this sense of control. Yeah. And I would maybe take that so far as to say, like, we think we are in control. And obviously it's important to create a sense of control, right? Like you're a coach, I'm a coach. We say, you know, systematize as much as you can. That at least gives you some sense of control. You know where you're going. You know what to expect. We know how to create accountability. So I'm in no way discounting that, but there is a certain delusion to those of us that think that we really are in control. And, you know, Mother Nature will have her way. The storms will brew. If you've taken shortcuts on the important kind of, you know, the mundane foundational stuff, you'll suffer, right? Like the analogy I would use is if you prioritize the car in the garage and not the structure of the garage itself, hold on tight.
Right.
Things are going to get a little crazy. Yeah.
Yes. I love that analogy and the whole principle of we can't be in control. Like one of the things that we teach on is ownership, accountability, and responsibility, because those things we can start to wrap our head around, right, and get our arms around. But I agree, right? We can't control anybody or anything other than ourselves, and at times we'll even fight with ourselves, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's the hard choice, right? Because it's not the sexy part. It's not why we got into being in business. It literally, it asks us, it demands of us that we bring ourselves down out of those pieces and work on the really boring, really gritty foundational pieces to make sure that we can be kind of let loose to go have the fun, and feel like it's worthwhile.
Yes, right. For visionary entrepreneurs, for in particular, this is a tough thing because, right, that those folks and maybe that's you too, want to stay in the ideation and what's the next new thing and what's the big idea, and the idea of, you know, landing the plane and connecting the dots and building the processes and procedures is like, oh my goodness, just stick a needle in my eye.
Yes. Yeah, literally. And we have conversations about this all the time, internally, because it is, I'm constantly like, hey, this is how we're going to do this. And I have just recently brought on a managing director whose job is to essentially protect my team from me.
Yep.
And be the filter for all of those ideas so that I'm not keeping people, you know, kind of running after all of those things, and to have the awareness that I have after a year of her saying, well, you know, just hang tight on that for a minute.
Yeah.
It's been interesting to learn how often I've probably been pulling people off of their center. So yeah.
I've often said to leadership teams when I've evaluated their CEO or the founder is like, hey, you're that person probably comes into a meeting like a whirlwind and is all excited and energetic and throws out about 100 ideas and then is super pumped up and leaves and says, okay, go ahead and do that. And
right. And
you're like, and you, the team are sitting there, okay, I don't have 100, you know, openings in my calendar to work on all this stuff. And really,
and I'm only 50% through the last idea that you came in here.
Yeah. And usually what happens too is the person who left, they walked out with, that was a fantastic meeting. They know the one thing that I want them to work on. This is awesome. It's going to get done. And it's like one thing, you just shared 100 things. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, that self-awareness is so important, so critical in the journey.
And it's awesome that you have that person to be able to do the translation and you feel comfortable with them pushing back and right and monitoring, engaging, right? How much of that stuff actually gets to the team. That's huge. Congratulations.
Thank you.
On that awareness. Yeah.
Thank you.
So Andrew, we know that business success doesn't happen in isolation. So tell us about one of the biggest challenges you had in building your business, and maybe a fellow business owner or a colleague that came alongside you and helped you through that.
Tim, I am fresh out of that challenge. We've just emerged from that particular challenge. Yeah, the timing couldn't get better. We've really faced two really important challenges in the last year and a half. One around kind of some talent challenges, and that's been coupled with some lessons in the discipline of defining and sticking to an ideal customer profile. Mm. So it's always been, I think, really important to me to be very discerning about the type of customer that we work with. I think I've learned over and over again, if you're not, you essentially run the risk of handing the reins of your business over to your customers. They can start to kind of, you know, define the direction of your business and tell it where to go. So I've personally had to take some responsibility for misfiring on some customers that had some pretty serious impact on our team. And, you know, when we boil that down, I chose revenue overseeing the clear signs that they were probably not going to be a good fit for our unique value proposition. So that's been work that I have been really grateful to get clear on. And I'm super excited to kind of move forward with what we know and the work that came out of that. I think I now have enough experience under my belt to know that every single solitary time you misalign with a customer, it is going to come back to bite you in the butt.
Yeah.
100% of the time.
And yet so hard to say no, isn't it? When you
so
have
hard.
That little dollar sign floating right in front of you. And it's just a matter of, well, it's
well,
right.
You know, they're always your biggest customers too, right?
Yeah,
like it's, it's an amount that you're like, we can't say no to this.
Yep, of course. Yes.
Yep. Yep. Say no to it.
And then to your point earlier, right, then we get in a position where the dog is, or the tail's wagging the dog and like, uh-oh. Well, I'm glad that you were able to navigate through that. That's awesome. How, if you wouldn't mind sharing, how, what was the process? How did you get yourself to that understanding and be able to get back to a better place?
Yeah, I love that you asked that. I mean, I think we you have to notice that something doesn't feel right, that your team is off kilter. And that takes asking, because they need permission to be able to tell you that and feel like that's safe. Two, listening, truly listening. And three, being really clear with what you're willing to do about it. In our case, we were willing to make whatever move we had to make, up to and including parting ways with those customers, just recognizing the misalignment, being able to graciously uncouple with those clients in a way that was fair, whether it was kind of leading them to that decision or making that decision for them. And then we went into the work of, okay, let's define all of our great clients. What do they look like?
Mm.
We've done avatars, so personality profiles and avatars that kind of define the client, that are stories that we can then tell back to people so that we're not trying to convince someone necessarily that we're the right fit, but they're identifying with, I am that person. That's me. That's my story. That makes sense to me. Yeah. And you know, there's probably four or five of them. They're really consistent. Yeah. And I think we've seen that's fairly normal for most business owners in this work. So that's been really, really cool work to do.
That's fantastic. You know, the first time we have to fire a customer, it feels a little overwhelming, but almost immediately there tends to be this sense of relief that we made the right decision. Did you guys go through that?
We did. And it was, you know, it's not to be taken lightly, because there were people's jobs then on the other line, on the other end of that. So our team had scaled to support that business and making the decision that we were going to pull back from it for the greater good of the future of the company. That's a tough decision in of itself. And underlying that was that we were going to have to reduce the size of the team.
Yeah.
I know this is not true for everybody, but for me, those are all human beings that I am authentically in relationship with, that I care about deeply. So I would never take any of those decisions lightly. We navigated it with being as transparent about all of that information as we possibly could. And even then it was still really, really difficult. So I think, you know, somewhere between the misalignment with customers and then having to realign the team, we've learned a ton.
Yeah.
And then I think, you know, the other thing there with embedded within that were also team issues, right? So part of how we got there is that we had also made some negotiations about the way that we were building the team that also had impact on customers. So there was, it's not like the negotiation on what was right or wrong just happened to live in one little business.
Yes.
I was doing that with some consistency. Again, credit to Anna as the managing director for really kind of grounding that down into its principles of what we had determined and communicated was the right person for us, for a team member and from a customer perspective.
These things are never fun and easy.
Yeah.
And at the same time, they're filled with incredible gifts of learning, and because the business owner path is never linear, right? We're going to make mistakes all the time. And it's really just a matter of learning from those mistakes and becoming better versions of ourselves. And it sounds like that's what you guys have gone through. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
And learning that there's another lesson that we're actively in right now too, that we just don't have the awareness of.
Yeah. Right. Yet. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. We don't know what we don't know, but we will one of these moments. Yeah. Yeah.
Andrea, I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit and ask you to pick three people in your business owner journey that you're most grateful for them being there as part of your business's growth? Who are the three people and how they help you?
This is where I'm going to break the rules. Because to me, it's two really important groups of people. And it would be really difficult for me to pull a single person out of that group. I had a CEO forum, peer group early in my career, that some of my best friends came out of. I'm still connected with probably 80% of the people in that group. We are still referring people. We're referring business back and forth because of the trust that was formed, in that business, not just relationships, not out of obligation, but because we really know who we are as individuals. So people that I absolutely adore, but the thing that was happening in that group is that, it was the first time that I was exposed to other CEOs or leaders, presidents, owners, that, there was a vulnerable place for, sharing what happens to what your business does to your life, right? As a CEO, it's very difficult to have those conversations in your personal life in a way that people can really go there with you. Yep. And then, you know, how life impacts business too. And we like to skirt that a lot. We like to do flyovers on what's going on in everybody's life, but especially for people responsible for leadership, and being steady in organizations, it is really important that we have a place that we can feel safe, that we can have those conversations. Again, those were people that showed me what discipline looked like. I got to see what happened when, I'll use a name, when Mark Thacker, for instance, took his single shingle coaching business from coach to franchised organization with a national, and probably at this point in time, for all I know, international footprint, mm-hmm. and was able to sell it. And we watched what that took. We watched Mark say, I'm going to document my processes. And we were like, okay. And then a year later, we were like, holy crap, look what happens when you document your processes, you know?
Right.
And then just people being able to challenge, you know, it is important to put yourself in a place where people can tell you about yourself, where you're not just, you know, bebopping about the world, thinking that you're God's gift to everyone around you. It's really important to be able to open yourself up to the vulnerabilities of like, hey, this is the impact you're having when you do this, when you make a commitment and you don't deliver on it. So I needed all of those things. I really needed that accountability group. Mm. So that was kind of the one critical piece. And then again, breaking the rules a little bit, but I have also had the unbelievable gift of being in a consulting, coaching, advising role, which means I've always gotten to associate with people that are way smarter than me, way ahead of me in terms of what they're doing from an organizational management standpoint. They're already moving leaps and bounds beyond. And then I get to watch their mistakes. Mm. I get to watch what works. I get to watch how they play with things, what structures have worked. So it's just like, that's also been, you know, like a gift that it's worth its weight in gold. Right. And there are some very specific leaders that, you know, I think have been some of the most impressive people that I've ever been around in my entire life, that I've gotten to work with. And that's just, it's really cool.
That's awesome.
So my three people is a whole lot of people, Tim.
Well, I'll let you off on that this time.
Thank you.
Andrea, as you think about the next 1 to 3 years, what's the number one priority or challenge that you see in achieving your goals?
I am excited to say that I think we just have an opportunity to work our plan, and it feels good that's kind of what the opportunity is. We put a lot of hard work in over the last couple of years, just getting, you know, real about and clear about what we want the next 1, 3, and 5 years to look like. I've been challenged to look out further than that. What does 10 years look like? Which is very difficult for a visionary. I'm like, what do you mean 10 years? Like,
yeah,
who
knows? Yeah.
What's gonna be in 10 years? That's nuts. Why would I even tell you that? It's not going to actually happen. But, you know, learning the value of of why we set those targets so that we can work back, kind of reverse engineer our organizations into at least what we can dream there.
Yes.
So we're in an industry, I think, that technology develops really quickly. There's a lot of bright, shiny objects. I think we just have to be really careful in our growth not to get distracted by all the, we hear a lot about, as everybody is, a lot about the way AI will impact the business. There's lots and lots of different psychological tools that are being implemented into what we do, some of which are really valuable, some of which are a distraction, some are serving trends, some are, long tested. And we have to be able to discern those things to be able to survive the next evolution of what we do in our work. And still keep it simple so that people can really, we talk about going back to the basics all the time. I've already said it once in the conversation, but there's a lot of really fun, sexy, bright, shiny things that you can focus on, but not until you get the basics right.
For sure. Yeah. Amen to getting the fundamentals solid before we try to scale. Otherwise, the chaos that comes is just, unsustainable.
Yes. Yeah. And
I really like, thank you for sharing about the long-term goals versus medium-term. And a lot of us wrestle with that idea of, hey, I don't know, so we teach, what does the business look like when it's done? So even beyond 10 years and same ideas, I can't think that far. But here's the thing, right, is it doesn't have to be exactly perfect, but it helps us today say, hey, is this decision I'm about to make aligned to my long-term goal for the business, or am I going off into left field and it's completely a tangent and I don't see a path to, so it can help us be a little bit more discerning in the short term of the decisions that we're going to make. But for sure, the reality is the future is going to be different than we've assumed, but at least we've got that North Star that's helping to guide our decisions today.
I would have been one of the people that you would have had to have convinced. Over and over and over and over again.
But it sounds like you're refocusing and you're on the right path. So that's awesome. It sounds like in the last couple of years you guys have done some amazing internal work and not just processes but headspace work as well. So that's fantastic. Great job.
Thank you.
Last question, Andrea. Jim Rohn, amazing business guru, says that we become the average of the five people that we spend the most time with. So as you think about that, what advice would you have for business owners who are trying to do it on their own?
I've yet to see it work. I was getting ready to say not once. I think I know a guy that mines Bitcoin. He's doing okay on his own. So if that's your world, I don't know, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. I don't know what the balances are, but I can still remember the first thing I let go of. It was bookkeeping and finances, and I was horrible at them. I think as you and I got to know one another, I shared with you, like, those first 3 or 4 years in business, I laugh because I thought I was making six figures. Right. So I'm like, man, I'm doing great. But I wasn't paying my taxes. Right. and the IRS and I have worked all of that out a long time ago. All is well. But, I was operating from like a really naive, irresponsible place. And so like bringing that full circle, we all have things that we're not good at and don't give us energy. I wasn't doing it because I was afraid to show up to it because I didn't know what I was doing and it sucked the life out of me. Yes. And I didn't really know that I had permission to let somebody else do that. Additionally, I feared paying someone, letting money leave the business so that somebody else could lend their expertise. In my limited mind at the time, I couldn't see how that would work. I was, again, convinced by people smarter than me to try it. And I, like I said, still can viscerally feel what that felt like, how awesome it felt to let it go. And then from that point on, it was like, what else can I let go?
Yeah.
How marketing here, here's some money, do my marketing.
Yes.
And so it's kind of, we actually have baked into our annual planning. We do that every single solitary year, everybody on our team does it. And I think it's really important to do that beyond just the business owner. Because the engagement, when people feel like you care about the energy that they get out of their job, sometimes you're revealing to someone that they may be in a position that they shouldn't be in, because they look at the job description and go like, oh, I hate everything on here. Oh, well, Okay, we've got a little something we need to, we've got to fix. But more often than not, you know, there's other places in the organization, there's somebody who loves everything.
Yep.
There is no part of work that is done that somebody doesn't love. There are bookkeepers, there are executive assistants, there are people who love to be in email. Absolutely. There are lead generators, still blows my mind. People who want to make their own phone calls. You know, so I think we've really gotten comfortable with identifying the thing. And I'm not suggesting it's all like it's easy to just always outsource. There's been resourcing challenges to that and continue to be. That you have to work with. So every once in a while, you've got to decide, I'm going to do something I don't really like, but I know the opportunity cost at all times.
Yes.
And I know that I have to work to get that thing off my plate so that I can go back in to a revenue generating, productive activity within the business, something that's going to benefit the business. So I think, you know, that surrounding yourself with people who do get energy by the things that you don't, getting those off of your plate. And then the other one that I would say is just, and you said it in Jim Rohn's quote, you've got to lean on people to make you better, build a community of people that are aspirational to you. People who make you want to be the best version of yourself and also expect you to show up.
Yes.
That way that they'll hold you to it. They'll say like, hey, what's going on here, or you know, I've noticed the following, or you're getting in your own way. The way that they live their life is, you know, is just something that you want to keep up with. It's magnetic,
yes.
And it pulls everyone. And having that kind of group, professionally, personally, with my family, you know, when you really get there, there's no greater sense of like aliveness.
Yeah.
And wellness, in that you've got a team with you through anything that you can go through in life.
That's awesome. You mentioned it a couple times today, is that you've been blessed with having, you know, incredibly smart people that helped you become a better version of yourself. So there's another quote of, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room, right?
Yeah. Find another room. Yep.
Well, Andrea, it sounds like you've had some incredible people that have helped you along in your business journey. So if they were all on the show here today, what would you want to say to them?
Oh man, we'd go have an amazing meal. In fact, we'd go somewhere for the weekend. We'd go to a cabin. We would celebrate over lots of glasses of wine and share an amazing meal. And you know, I just owe, it's not an O in a monetary way, but I feel so much gratitude for the gifts that have been given to me. Mm. And, you know, feel that sense of joy in giving back, and joy in finding opportunity to be able to lift people up and empower them. You already have what you need. Go find the people who believe in you, who will continue to kind of lift you up into what already is. That you just, you know, you need to realize. And I think, thank you to all the people that did that, for me, really kind of, a little, emotional with the question, because it means so much.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing, Andrea. It's been a pleasure having you on the show today.
Likewise. Thanks so much for having me, Tim.
Thanks for listening to the Self-Made is a Myth show. Please help spread this movement by liking and subscribing to our show and following us on Facebook and LinkedIn. To join our movement, go to bemadtogether.com. Okay, folks, that's a wrap. Please pay it forward and be sure to tune in next time to the Self-Made is a Myth podcast.